As people realise that it's as important to look after your mental fitness as it is your physical fitness, what are some of the things you can do to maintain good mental health? How do you avoid burnout and how do you recover from it? Well, these are some of the things that we're going to talk about in this week's episode. I'm Jeremy Klein and this is Change Work Life. Hello and welcome to the Change Work Life podcast, the show where we're all about beating the Sunday evening blues and enjoying Mondays again. If you want to know how you can enjoy a more satisfying and fulfilling working life, you're in the right place. It's been 4 years since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, and one of the shifts we've seen since then is an increased focus on mental health and well-being, both in the workplace and more generally. Whilst the pandemic might, hopefully, be behind us, the importance of taking care of yourself mentally as well as physically is still front and center. To discuss some of the ways you can look after your own mental health, as well as recognize when things might be going wrong, I'm delighted to be joined by the hosts of one of my favorite podcasts. Al and Leanne Elliott are the founders of Oblong, the one-stop shop for business owners who want to build a great culture within their team. And they also host the Truth, Lies and Workplace Culture podcast, which provides advice on everything people and workplace related. Leanne, Al, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much to have us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's great. Great to be here.
So, who are this powerhouse couple? Why don't you give us a quick introduction to who you are and what you're about?
Powerhouse couple? I'm not sure I've been described as that before, but I'll take it, Jeremy. Thank you. My name is Leanne Elliott. I am a business psychologist and leadership coach, as you introduced beautifully there. We help organizations simplify the science of people, create awesome workplace cultures, and that includes creating organizations and environments where people experience positive mental well-being.
And I am Al. I'm Leanne's husband. I am a business owner, had some great businesses, had some terrible businesses, been bankrupt, so, and also done quite well. So I think that I've got experience of the highs and the lows of business, but essentially on the podcast, I'm there to sort of ask Leanne the questions so she doesn't get too much into the science weeds and say, look, what are the practical applications of all the stuff that you know in your amazing brain?
Fantastic. All right. I wanted to focus in this conversation about mental health. I'm aware that whilst both of you are very knowledgeable on the topic, neither of you are sort of specifically mental health practitioners. I'm certainly not a mental health practitioner, and no one listening to this should take this as any kind of medical advice or anything like that. As they say, this is for entertainment and information only. Also, it's a topic which people could find a little bit triggering. So if anyone might find this a difficult interview to listen to, then do whatever it is that you need to. With that out of the way, I mean, mental health is something that you talk about quite a lot on your own podcast. So what is it that makes it such an important issue for you?
Why is it an important issue? I mean, currently, why it's an important issue, you know, as you said, the pandemic 4 years ago, man, I can't believe it's that long. You know, for a long time, and certainly accelerated by the pandemic, the state of mental health in the UK has been unacceptably poor. And a lot of that is down to how people operate in the workplace, the environment that they're operating in, and the responsibilities leaders have to create organizations, environment in which people don't experience adverse mental health. So I think for me as a business psychologist, organizations and people can thrive together. But to do that, we really need to consider that dynamic, the individual and the organization. Businesses will always do better. They will grow faster. They'll be more profitable if they create environments where their people thrive.
Yeah. And I think the other sort of aspect of, in terms of the individual mental health, I'm Gen X male. The stats tell me that I'm probably the one who's in the group of people who are going to have issues with mental health, are less likely to be open about them. And what's nice about the new generations, the Zs and the millennials, is that they do tend to talk a bit more about their own mental health and make it much more of a commonplace discussion. So I think I've spoken to lots of people on the podcast who are kind of my age as well, who've said, in fact, I spoke to a guy yesterday and he was like, I just had this breakdown. I thought I was having a heart attack, but actually turned out to be a panic attack. And I didn't want to tell anyone because I was just frightened they'd think I was weak. And I think that's kind of seems to be a little bit of a theme amongst particularly men, particularly of my age upwards, I think. The other part of it, which I think we have talked about before you press record, was that we're both Samaritans in the UK, and that's how we met. We kind of like the very first moment that we met each other, we were both obviously very aware of adverse mental health and, you know, wanted to do something about it.
Yeah, I think we'd both had experiences leading up to that point where we'd had our own challenges with mental health. We'd found our own ways to get support or develop our own coping mechanisms. And we realized that, you know, often acknowledging these things are challenging. And as Al said, talking about them, being open about them, seeking support makes all the difference. So yeah, that's probably where it started. And truth and lies and workplace culture is probably where it currently is.
Mm.
Certainly put a link in the show notes to the episode you did where you talk about your experience with the Samaritans, because that was an absolutely incredible story. I won't spoil it, but definitely check out that episode. It's absolutely fantastic. A very broad question. What do you understand by the term mental health?
I'm probably not qualified. Leanne is qualified to talk about what mental health is. I think from a layperson's point of view, mental health always seems to have a little bit of a stigma attached to it, where if you talk about mental health, then you tend to say, oh, it's adverse mental health. He's got mental health problems. She's got mental health issues. It's nice to see that now the conversation is moving towards just positive mental health as well, and mental health just being part of the conversation, as I said before. But I understand mental health to be something which is so vitally important to both work, life, marriage, fun, everything. And that it's so massively complicated because there doesn't seem to be a balance. Because if you're doing really well at work and you're working hard at work, it might have an adverse effect on your mental health. If you aren't working hard at work and you're doing something else, it might have an adverse effect on your mental health. So I think the summary is mental health to me as a layperson has stopped becoming something that you need to worry, that is a bad thing, and something that really everyone suffers from mental health issues at some point. And so therefore it's something which I'm glad is back in the conversation.
100%. And I think, you know, as a psychologist, you know, there is that distinction between, you know, normal and very much in inverted commas, abnormal psychology. You know, abnormal psychology might look at mental health and look at clinical conditions like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or, you know, the whole list that they have. And I think where the conversation is, as Al said, is thankfully headed, is putting the spotlight on mental health from a normal psychology perspective. So what is probably become more popular in the past few years, a positive psychology perspective. So rather than thinking about how do we get people from, you know, a point of illness to a point of surviving, how do we actually talk about mental health or mental fitness in a way that moves people from surviving to thriving? Because that's when we'll really see the benefits in terms of our businesses, in terms of our society. It really is endless, the amount of improvements we will be able to see if we can move that needle to thriving.
Really interesting. As you were talking then, I was thinking about the distinction between physical health and mental health, and how physical health is something which people can brag about improving. Oh, look, I'm entering into this marathon or this ultra marathon, or, you know, I'm now going to the gym 3 times a week and look at my washboard stomach, that kind of thing. You know, it's something where you can, yeah, talk about what you're doing, talk about the effects. But mental health at the moment, I don't think there's any conversation around, hey, look what I'm doing to improve myself mentally. Maybe, oh, I meditate a bit.
Yeah, I think there's the signs, you know. We look at even those meditation apps are becoming much more popular. I think people are talking more about mindfulness or yoga or breathing exercises. It is becoming much more mainstream. We are seeing that pop up. But I think the disconnect for me, and I guess this is, you know, the probably the journey that physical health has gone through in the past 100 years, is that connection between the what and the why. Why does mindfulness work? What actual impact is that having on mental health, mental fitness, well-being? And I think that's what I'd like to see, both for individuals and organizations as well, is that curiosity, that passion that we see, you know, as you say, you know, people that love going to the gym, running marathons, that passion extending into mental wellness as well, because we should shout about it. We should brag about, you know, all the things we're doing to build that muscle strength in that way. That would be cool. I'd like a world where that's the case.
One of the aspects of mental health, which again has come to the forefront quite a lot, especially when people were combining homeschooling, home working, when we were all locked up in our houses and couldn't go out and everything just seemed to be closing in, is the question of burnout. I'm curious as to, again, what you understand by the term burnout and perhaps how you distinguish it from just having quite a lot on.
I think the distinction that, well, the definition always to start with is the clinical definition, which the World Health Organization offers. And I think that the key part of that distinction, there is the, you know, the three main symptoms, but it's how they're prolonged. So that exhaustion, that detachment being prolonged over time. Like you say, it's not a case of having a bad day, a bad month, is that period of time where your coping mechanisms are no longer becoming or effective. And I think that's where we see people burning out. And I think when people truly get to the point where they burn out, it's called burnout because it is a crash. It is an explosion. You'll hear so many people talk about their own personal experiences and it manifests in these physical ways where people are literally crumbling and collapsing. And I think it's that connection we often don't always think about when it comes to mental health is the mind and body connection. And they are so intertwined. And I think that's also often where people will perhaps miss signs of burnout because they will associate it with the exhaustion, with the cynicism. But it is also about the physical side you're going to see as well in terms of poorer digestion, headaches, vertigo. That was a big symptom I had when I had my experience with burnout. And I think that in itself is important to remember. And again, if it is extended over a period of time, going back to what you said before, if you are experiencing any physical symptoms, do go see a doctor, rule that out first. But yeah, I think that for me is a difference with burnout, is the length of time and the severity of the symptoms and the ineffectiveness of coping mechanisms that probably previously worked quite well.
Yeah, and I think you said something before about physical health. And so there is a difference between being overwhelmed and then being burnt out. And again, I'm not a mental health practitioner or GP or anything, so this is just my opinion. But you can't, like, if you talk about physical health and, like, say you want to do weightlifting, well, you're taking your muscle to the point that they just about, like, there's too much, and then they break down, build up, and become stronger. So there is an element of that, is that if you're feeling stressed, it may not necessarily be burnout. It may be that you're actually just making yourself mentally stronger every day because you are experiencing that stress. So I think we've just got to, from a practical point of view, we've got to make sure we don't go too far the other way and go, just because you're having a bad day, I'm starting to burn out. Now, of course, I'm not saying is that, you know, that burnout is just, you know, having one bad day. As Leanne said, it's prolonged, but, you know, some stress is good. And I think we just need to be sort of aware a little bit that having stress in our life, we're not going to eliminate stress completely, just like we wouldn't eliminate stress at the gym, because you wouldn't get, you know, you wouldn't build any muscle, you wouldn't lose any weight if you didn't actually push yourself. So I think it's just important to kind of consider that there's this spectrum, and at one end is burnout, but you can get somewhere along that spectrum and still grow and still be relatively healthy as long as everything else is in balance and it's not prolonged. Lee,
absolutely. I'm loving this analogy because I think the difference is what makes that muscle stronger. And any gym buff will tell you it's rest and recovery. You know, you have to have your rest days. You have to have that recovery time. You need to eat well. You need to, you know, complement it with other, you know, other holistic ways of building strength. And I think it's the same with mental health. It's the same in terms of having positive stress. And you're absolutely right, Al. If we don't have enough stress, then we become detached in a way that's called rust out, where we're not fulfilled and we're not happy because of that. So yeah, I think I love that analogy. And I think the only thing I'd say is the difference is building in that rest and recovery time.
You mentioned there the World Health Organization definition of burnout and three symptoms. Can you talk a little bit more about that for those who haven't come across that?
Yeah, so the World Health Organization gave us the official definition and I guess a way of diagnosis. It is controversial because a lot of practitioners don't agree with it. The World Health Organization sees it very much as a workplace phenomenon. It happens in work because of prolonged workplace stress. There are plenty of practitioners that will quite rightly argue it's not restricted or confined to the workplace. You can think of many examples, you know, in terms of parents, caregivers will probably experience burnout at some point. So yeah, but the definition that is a good working good place to work from recognizes three main symptoms or main challenges somebody may experience. The first is exhaustion, and that's not just necessarily feeling tired. It's feeling that energy depletion, really that sense of in the truest word, exhaustion, and again, for a prolonged period of time. Cynicism, which is often one that isn't talked about very much. We often focus a lot on exhaustion. Cynicism, being negative, seeing just barriers in the way, not being able to dream, not being able to, you know, be positive or have hope or be optimistic. That cynicism creeps in. And the sense of detachment from work, so feeling no meaning in your work, no point to it, is another symptom as well. So yeah, the World Health Organization offers that definition. Some agree, some disagree, but I think it is a useful starting point.
I remember reading a book, well, no, maybe it was a podcast interview with a chap called Ben Goldacre, who's written a couple of books about sort of the medical industry, medical science, how badly reported it is, that kind of thing. And one of the things he commented in the interview was when he was starting out as a training to be a doctor, he'd learn all about these illnesses and the symptoms, and suddenly he'd become the world's biggest hypochondriac because he saw all these symptoms in himself. And I'm just kind of looking at these exhaustion, cynicism and attachment, and I reckon there's an awful lot of people who go, yeah, okay, that sounds like me. So does that mean everyone's burning out, or is there a sort of a level you need to get to, if you like? That sounds like a terrible computer game where you kind of get to burnout.
I mean, the latest stats are showing everyone's burning out. You know, it's been coined like the new epidemic, because so many people are reporting signs and symptoms of burnout. Of course, like anything, there is severity to it. I think this comes down to, they said that how prolonged the symptoms are, your opportunity to rest and recover, and how effective your coping mechanisms are. And I think, yes, there are plenty of people who will feel tired, who will feel a bit negative from time to time, who will feel that sense of lost meaning in their work. Are those symptoms debilitating? Are those symptoms at a point where you can't even think about a world where you would enjoy a job or you would enjoy work? Is it that you don't even have the energy to try and be positive? The world is rubbish and there isn't any way of changing it. I think it's how debilitating those symptoms are on your ability to cope and change. And I think it's that lack of agility and resilience at that point to make the changes you need to. Without that, it results in burnout. And I think a lot of people do hit a rock bottom before they will realize. Others will catch themselves somewhere on the way down. I think if anyone's experiencing those symptoms, maybe consider that, you know, do some reflection and think about how deep rooted those thoughts and feelings are. I think if anyone is truly burnt out, they will probably already know. They will be feeling those negative impacts in their life, on their career, and on the people around them.
Obviously what Leanne says is just perfect. I think one of the things that we've both discovered is that, and I don't want to get all Rudyard Kipling on you, but kind of to have the, you know, to those things you can't control, just to almost like put them in a balloon, like Leanne talked about, putting things in a balloon, letting it go. And that can help a certain amount, because then when you're just left with those things you care about and you can control, like a Venn diagram. And that certainly helped me in some of the times when I just felt so overwhelmed. Was just going, well, I can't control that, and I can't control that, and I can't control that, so why am I even worrying about it? And almost just by writing them on a piece of paper, sticking them on the door and never looking at them again, it was like, oh, that feels really good. Now, I'm not saying this is oh, you solve burnout by doing that, but there is a lot of overwhelm in life, and I think that a lot of people care about things they can't necessarily control, and one of the first steps that I personally have found really useful is just to let go of some of the stuff. I don't look at the news anymore because it just makes me feel sad, a lot of it. And so, you know, there's that sort of strategies that, again, we've all said, not mental health practitioner, not an expert, so I'm not saying these are going to fix things, but if you're not careful, you walk around with the weight of the world on your shoulders. In actual fact, there's very little of it you can control. Just concentrate on the stuff you care about and you can control, and, you know, life can seem a little bit lighter.
One of the best things I think I did was delete the BBC News app from my phone, because I found that I was just looking at it, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a day, and the news was never getting any better and it was never really changing. And now just avoiding daily news is actually really helpful. I found myself much calmer, much more peaceful about things now I've done that. To the external observer, so, you know, the concerned husband, wife, work colleague, what sort of things might they see in someone who is possibly starting to experience burnout?
Changes in behaviour, changes in mood swings, unpredictability, irritability are all going to be signs that somebody is potentially struggling. Detachment from things that they used to enjoy, hobbies, people, socialising, friends, family, not wanting to go to places they used to go to, that sense of wanting to isolate socially is a big red flag usually. And I think any signs that might, I guess other things could be a lack of sleep, maybe looking for those more physiological symptoms, again, with caution, because of course it could be something else. But yeah, a lack of insomnia, not being able to sleep, hypersomnia, wanting to sleep all the time, changes in appetite, that type of thing can be a sign as well. There's quite a lot, actually, and there's some great resources. Just, you know, Google it. You'll find lots of different sites. Positivepsychology.com is one of my favorites to just give you those kind of red flags. But I think changes, it's as simple as someone going, they're just not themselves. Mm. And there's a stacking number of ways that they are not the person that you know and love.
And I think also, like Leanne alluded to before, the not wanting to dream anymore. So whether it's you just go, what are we doing at the weekend? Or what are your goals for 2024, 2025? You know, if someone's unable to answer those, it goes, I just haven't got the time to think about that right now. That, from a personal point of view, I noticed that in Leanne when she was burnt out, that she just would, and we didn't talk about this on the podcast, was that she just wasn't, she just got irate when I said to her, so what are we going to do, you know, next year, which was a couple of years ago, what are we going to do next year? Where are we going to live? What do you want to see? And she's like, I just don't want to talk about it, which is not like Leanne. As I think you mentioned before, we travel and we have traveled full time for 10 years. So we basically had a new address every 3 months. And this was just like Leanne, I'm just not interested. And so I think if anyone you are talking to, your partner, spouse, kids, friends, and like Leanne says, they feel like they've not got the shine on the things they used to like, but also they don't want to dream anymore is probably, from my personal point of view or my personal experience, it was a sign that Leanne was burnt out.
And then if you see those signs, so Al, like you, I'm a Gen X male, so my natural inclination is, how do we fix this? I want to fix, how do we fix this? But I'm conscious that if I start trying to fix, quote unquote, someone, it's probably not going to be very well received, and I'm just going to end up putting my foot in my mouth or something along those lines. So yeah, if you've got concerns, a feeling that maybe someone isn't quite themselves in the way you've described, I mean, how do you broach it? How do you support them?
I think obviously Leanne's going to come in with some really good techniques. I can't talk to that because Leanne's the expert here. But I think from my experience, and it's just sitting down and first of all, realizing it's not about you. And that's very difficult. I mean, I'm, like you said, you've put the nail on the head there. As a male Gen X, you just want to fix things and just totally taking that out of the equation. And first of all, just realizing it's not about you. So when someone says something like this, first of all, it's no slight on you. Secondly, it's not your problem to fix. Leanne often says to me, I don't want you to fix it. I just want you to listen. Because Leanne's so brilliant and amazing as a wife, she will say that rather than, you know, going to sleep at her mum's for a week because she's upset with me. So not that she could, because her mum's 2,000 miles away. So first we'll start off to say it's not about you. Secondly, just listen. And then they might not be ready to talk about it, but just give them the opportunity. And we talk about in podcasting, we talk about these golden silences where you ask a question, the person answers it, and then you stop. The natural inclination from an interview is to jump in and ask the next question. You just leave the pause, like you do, Jeremy. Leave the pause, and often someone will say something else and add to it, and you're, that's the real gold. That's what I found when you're talking to someone close. Ask them a question, and when they've finished talking, just stop. Don't say anything. And if they look at you a bit weird, then you can always reflect back the last thing they said. So they said, yeah, just tired all the time. And you stay quiet and they look at you to go, you're weird. What are you doing? And you go, tired all the time. And they go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So what it is like, yesterday, I couldn't get out of bed. I had all these things to do and I just couldn't get myself out of bed. And you went, yesterday. Yeah. Oh, God. Do you know what? It happens probably about once a week, twice. Do you know what I mean? And that's sort of like just by reflecting back or just saying back the last few words of them will often let them to open up and just shut up and listen, because that's the way you can help to fix it, is just by listening.
Yeah. When we train as Samaritans, there's a really good analogy that was used in training about the power of listening, the power of guiding somebody through the thoughts in their mind just by asking questions. And it was an analogy of a tumble dryer with lots and lots of clothes spinning around. And to ask somebody a question, how are you doing? What, you know, tell me about this, is like stopping the tumble dryer. And then allowing that person to speak freely and reflecting back to them, what you're basically doing is allowing them to take out one jumper at a time, fold it and put it in a pile. One more jumper, fold it, put it in a pile. Are you taking the problems away? No. But you're helping to organize them into something that seems more manageable for that individual. So yeah, I wouldn't ever underestimate the power of just listening to somebody without agenda, without judgment, and without trying to fix it. That is probably the most effective thing you can do. And as Al said, and it's so hard, try not to take it personally. It really isn't about you. More than likely, it isn't about you at all. And if you are feeling that, make sure you've got somebody to talk to as well about how you're experiencing that loved one's current adverse mental health or burnout. You're also going to need that support and that outlet to provide that to the person you're trying to support.
And it's worthwhile spending time getting good at listening, because it's got so many amazing sort of upsides on it. So for example, if you're negotiating, just listening and shutting up, you're much more likely to get what you want. If you're at a party or you meet someone new, if you just shut up and listen and ask them questions, reflect back what they said, they will walk away thinking you're the most interesting person they've met at the party. This happened at a wedding when Leanne and I were there, and this guy would come up and he said to Leanne, I've just met this guy. I think you really like him. He's really interesting. And pointed me out. And Leanne's like, that's my husband. She's like, oh, right. The point is that I didn't say anything. I just kept asking him questions, repeating back. And he came away thinking I was the most interesting person in the room. I'd said nothing. So there's so many upsides and advantages to getting good at listening. And I'm not saying go and volunteer at Samaritans just to get good at listening. But if you are thinking of volunteering, Samaritans is an incredible organization because of the work it does, but also the training and the work it does on you. It's just transformational.
It is. It really is. And I think other things you can do that might feel a bit more practical, a bit more tangible, try and encourage that person to engage in the things that they love, do it with them. You know, if they used to love going for walks, suggest that you go for a walk on a certain day, plan it in advance so somebody also has that mental time to prepare for that activity happening. People who are experiencing symptoms of burnout probably aren't going to like surprises or ambiguity or any feeling of a lack of control, because that's what they're experiencing, is that lack of control. So I think anything like that, you know, if they enjoy cooking, or would suggest you go out for a nice meal, just try and find things that can reconnect with the hobbies, the activities that used to bring them some joy.
I think, yeah, also, no, we tend to, as humans, sort of skew towards introvertism. That's not the right word. Introvert or extrovert. Just bear in mind who your partner or the person you're speaking to is. And if they're introverted, then there's going to be a lot of things that they need to think about before they say it out loud. If they're extroverted, they might say it out loud without even thinking about it, which is, I'm extroverted, so I'm definitely say stuff like that. Just bear that in mind. So if someone says, I'm going to quit my job, if they're extroverted, they might be just saying that to test it out in their, you know, in their ears and listen to themselves saying it and go, do I want to? So don't jump on that and go, oh, no, don't do that, Derek, because, you know, you've got this great career. Just, you know, let them, if they are introverted, let them think about it. If they're extroverted, let them speak, and then they'll think about it.
That's a really good point. The 80-20 rule, right? So if you're introverted and you're trying to think through a problem, I'm introverted, I'll probably think through 80% of that problem in my head and then speak about the last 20%. So I'm pretty much made my decision and I'm using that extra 20% to test the idea, validate it, which is also why I can find it very difficult if it turns out that solution isn't the best one. And I feel for Al in those moments. Al's the other way around. So Al will think about 20% of the challenge in his head and then 80% he'll want to talk about. So I think it's even just having that understanding of which one you are and which one the other person might be will help you navigate that situation when they come to you? Because if you're, you know, if your partner, if your loved one is burnt out and they say, I want to quit my job, your immediate reaction is going to go, yes, do it. But that in itself then causes a barrier, because if that person then goes through that thought, that cycle, and thinks, actually, no, that's probably not the right thing for me, you've now put that barrier up where they're going to think that, well, you think I'm wrong because you told me to quit my job and I didn't. And any barrier to communication is the last thing you want when you're trying to support somebody who's going through a tough time. So yeah, I think that 80-20 rule is worth remembering, and try not to have too many opinions early on.
Leanne, you've touched on your own experience of burnout. What did recovery look like for you? I mean, what enabled you to kind of get through it to the other side?
The universe did me a favor, to be honest. I burnt out in February 2020, which is when the world shut down. So my schedule cleared up quite nicely. I had plenty of time to rest and recover. I couldn't go out and you know, be forced to socialize. I say forced because that was an energy drain for me. So yeah, I basically had the opportunity to switch off for 6 to 12 months. So in terms of the opportunity, pure circumstance and luck, which sounds daft to talk about the pandemic in that way, allowed me the time and space to really consider how I was feeling, what I was experiencing, and how I could get better. On top of that, it was things like changing, being honest, a big thing was changing my work. I completely changed what I was doing for a living. I went back and focused more on psychology. I'd worked remotely, and again, circumstance helped. I'd worked remotely since 2013, and all of a sudden I had people asking me how can I help them manage their teams remotely during the pandemic. So consultancy became something that I could do, and supporting business owners with this transition. So yeah, finding more meaning and purpose in my work definitely helped with the detachment side of it. The pandemic, not being able to go anywhere, helped with the exhaustion side of it, the rest and recovery. And in terms of cynicism, that's probably the thing that took the longest. And I think really what helped me with that was engaging in exercises around positive thinking. No one is default positive. We're all just, for evolution, default negative to protect ourselves to survive. There are things that we can do to train our brain to be more positive, whether that be things like gratitude practice, whether that be things like mindfulness exercises. I started a journal. I started to engage in these things. I started breathing exercise. I started getting out more with the dog, and that helped, but that took a lot of time. That took a lot of time. And I think it was just practice. And then getting to the point where I was gaining more energy from other aspects of my life. So I was feeling more meaning in my work. Therefore, I had more energy to put into those more positive thoughts and feelings. And then, of course, things like, you know, diet helped, sleep, investing in those sorts of self-care aspects as well. So, yeah, that was my personal journey. The thing I would say is that everyone, it's wonderful to listen to people's individual experiences with something like burnout or a mental health challenge, but it is my individual lived experience. Are those things exactly going to help somebody else? Maybe, maybe not. It's figuring out exactly where, you know, the root of for you is coming from. For me, it was definitely my work. I wasn't finding it fulfilling. That was the main source of my stress. So yes, by all means, it's great to listen to people and take inspiration. But I think as we've all said at this point, if you are, you know, if you can seek some kind of professional help or support, then that is the way to go. Everybody's journey is different.
Another aspect which is kind of related is, let's call it, external pressures. So comparison. So I don't know whether this might contribute to burnout, but I think it can definitely contribute to feelings of inadequacy. I'm thinking of two aspects of comparison. There's the Instagram lifestyle comparison. So, oh, look at me on the beach. Oh, look at me with the new car. Oh, look at me with whatever, whatever, whatever. So that's the kind of the look what I've got comparison. And then there's the look what I did to get there comparison. So it's the look at me. I'm up at 5 o'clock every morning and I start with half an hour's meditation and then a 4 mile run. And then I eat banana and goji berries for breakfast and, you know, all that kind of thing. I remember reading a book called The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod, where he has these sort of six practices to start with. And I sort of read it and thought, no, you've got to be joking. There's absolutely no way I'm going to do that. Interested to know your thoughts on comparison, the dangers of comparison and avoiding it.
Well, funnily enough, one of my favorite quotes, and I think it might be Roosevelt, is comparison is the thief of joy. And I mean, we're talking, that's probably, what, 800 years ago he said that. And it's just, it's exactly what you said there. There's comparison with others, as in what they have. There's comparison as in what they do. Like you said, the, you know, the Gary Vaynerchuk who works 29 hours a day and, you know, is always blah, 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 blah. And then there's also the comparison, which could be a bit healthy, is the comparison of yourself to where you were maybe 5 years ago. So there are some aspects of comparison that is good because you can see growth. But social media has got, social media tends to have a broad brush. Oh, it's bad because we're all looking at these sort of beautiful, healthy, fit people on a beach, don't seem to work, you know, and they're earning millions of pounds a year. But also it does help us in some ways to compare our situation with others if they are being very authentic about it. So, for example, I talked about Gen Z before and TikTok. I think they are now starting to be much more open about the issues that they're dealing with, in which case comparison can be good because you can go, well, if this person who's got 20,000 followers, 200,000 followers is feeling burnt out and down and just has bad days, maybe it's okay that I do, you know. So I think that we are moving slightly towards a more positive social media, but there's that other quote, isn't it, that people buy things they don't want with money they don't have to impress people they don't even like. And then that's one of the things, one of the reasons we found moving to Europe, particularly the Mediterranean and the Adriatic side of Europe, it doesn't seem to be that pressure for kids to go and buy a brand new BMW on finance. There doesn't seem to be a pressure for them to have the latest iPhone. People just seem a little bit more relaxed about here. And kids live with their parents till they're like they're 30 and then get married and go and find their own house or move downstairs to the house underneath their parents and live there for the rest of their lives. I think some of the countries, particularly sort of North Europe, the US, North America, Australia, we've gone too far because we're not only comparing ourselves to people on Instagram and going, why can't I have that life? You're also comparing yourself to the person next door who's just bought a new car, who's probably comparing themselves to the person at work who's just bought a new car, who's probably comparing themselves ultimately to the person who's just got a garage full of Lamborghinis. It's just this chain that if you're not careful can be so, so damaging. What do you think, Lee?
I agree. And I think the antidote is maybe thinking about what do you actually want? You know, we spend a lot of time going through the motions of going to school, doing our A-levels, going to university, getting a job, working our way up in that job, getting another job. And I think it's surprising how few people actually take the time to think, what do I want from my life? What are my values? What are my goals? What are my interests? Where do I find my joy? What do I find fulfilling? How do I want to contribute to the people around me, to my community? And I think if you take the time, and I would always recommend coaching as a way of supporting that guided reflection. If you know what you want from life and what you're willing to sacrifice for that life, then all of a sudden comparisons become, as Al said, the more healthy ones because you're comparing like for like. You know, it's easy to sit here and go, oh, you know, look at this really rich billionaire who has three Lamborghinis and a beach house in Malibu, but they work 18 hours a day. Personally, I'm not willing to work 18 hours a day. I want a more holistic experience for my work. So I think that is what I'd encourage people to do. And again, that's probably where some of the cynicism might be coming from, is that comparison and that feeling of it's unfair. So yeah, my thought would be if you are maybe finding yourself in the trap of those comparisons or, you know, rolling your eyes when you see somebody on social media, Maybe try that if you haven't before. Think about what it is that you actually want.
Exactly. Envy is not a good look on anyone. And it just shows that you don't value what you've got. And I think that if you want to start comparing yourself, then go to the majority of the world who live on like a dollar a day or don't have, you know, the brand new phones and don't, you know, you can compare yourself downwards and you'll realize you're in the top 10% of the luckiest people in the world.
Love this idea of comparing yourself to yourself. So looking at where you've come, where you were and where you are now. Because, yeah, people often will say, oh, you know, I'm 30 years old, I've done nothing with my life. I've just wasted it having, you know, done lots of traveling and taught English abroad and that kind of thing. But they're not like verging on partnership in a law firm, which their friends are, that kind of thing. Whereas if you look at yourself, what you've done so far, where you're going, and then keep on kind of looking back to see how you've developed. Yeah, that strikes me as a heck of a lot healthier and more encouraging as well.
Yeah, well, we both got like perfect experience of that because we've been out of the UK for 10 years, been traveling for 10 years. We've got, you know, an iPhone full of amazing photos, a head full of amazing experiences and memories. But if we were to compare ourselves directly to our peers, they are probably 10, 20 times further up in their career. They might have, you know, they might have bought their third home, which is now a huge mansion. And, you know, so if we start comparing ourselves, then yet, like you say, you're going to be unhappy without thinking about actually, what's the cost of that? What was the cost of getting the beautiful house in the suburbs with the three BMWs on the drive? Well, the cost of that was having not being able to go out and, you know, travel the world for 10 years. Not saying that everyone wants to do that, but we decided that's what we were going to do. And the cost of us having that amazing life is that we don't have, we're not, like you said, top partner at a law firm with cars, you know, coming out the wazoo. So it's just down to the cost and the decisions you make, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's why we see, you know, a lot of people hit their mid to late 30s and want a career change, not find that the work is as fulfilling anymore. You know, financial well-being is a key part of well-being, but all the data shows is that after about £50,000 a year, money doesn't equal happiness anymore. It doesn't really have an impact. So I think that's where we see lots of people look for those career transitions at that point where they realize, yes, I have achieved these great things in my career, but I feel I am lacking in terms of the amount of time I get to spend with my family or the experiences I get to have or how much I get to travel. It's all a trade-off. And I think it's really just understanding what you're willing to sacrifice for. And I think with that, when you know what those things are and you reflect, like you said, like for like on your achievements over the past 5 years, 10 years, by doing that, you're starting to internalize those achievements. You're starting to accept those achievements. And that is not only brilliant in terms of building resilience and optimism and what we call psychological capital, which is a key part of protecting our own mental health and well-being, but it also keeps us away from the risk of imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome is an inability to internalize our achievements and feeling like an imposter. I think it's probably another way that you can end up making comparisons because you don't feel that you deserve to be there. So I think that can help with that as well. But yeah, I think there is something really powerful in that, comparing like for like.
This is a subject we could probably talk for hours on, but I feel like I probably do need to bring it to a close. If someone wants to find out more about any of the topics that we've discussed, I mean, what resources, tools have helped you as you've sort of considered all these issues?
There is an awesome psychologist that helped me massively, particularly with the journaling and addressing my cynicism. And that's a psychologist called Dr. Audrey Tang. She is awesome. She has three incredible books that are very practical. Yes, she does talk to you about some of the theory because she wants you to connect the what and the why, but then it's really practical. Lots of great exercise in there. And she has three books, The Leader's Guide to Resilience, The Leader's Guide to Mindfulness, The Leader's Guide to Wellbeing. I'd recommend all three. She also has her own podcast as well called The Wellbeing Lounge, which is pretty awesome. So yeah, that would be my default, particularly for anyone who might be experiencing some symptoms of burnout at the moment. That was hugely helpful for my personal journey.
Yeah, and I think anyone who's feeling overwhelmed, then one book which really helped me massively was, I forget who the author is, but it's called The One Thing. And basically it teaches you, you don't even need to read the book. It says, write down what you would want to achieve in 12 months, then go, what's the one thing I have to do in the next month to get that? What's the one thing I have to do in the next week to get that? What's the one thing I have to do in the next day, in the next hour? What's the one thing I have to do right now to get there? And it just breaks down these huge, big problems into something you can actually go and do. That's a brilliant, brilliant book. I say there's there's loads of stuff online if you want to search for it. There's loads of great people on Twitter who share their stories of burnout. And I will email you the name of the guy. I can't quite remember right now, but he's just so open about everything. He's just a great person to follow. And then just practical stuff like Leanne and I, the other week, if you can't really see with the camera, but there's a door behind us, a load of post-it notes, and we were both feeling overwhelmed. So we just wrote down all the things we're being overwhelmed by, stuck them on the door. And then when the doors open, you don't see them. And you just go every week and go, oh, I've done all these now and I've forgotten about them.
Yeah. And I think in terms of podcasts as well, particularly with burnout, there's two that spring to mind. Kate Donovan has a podcast called Fried, the Burnout Podcast. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Has so many great experts on there. She herself is a speaker and coach as well. That's really good. And in terms of men's mental health, I think we have to give a shout out to Expansive Intimacy by Jim Young. Jim is a coach and is trying to, he's your Gen X as well, and he's trying to very much change the conversation narrative around men's mental health by creating these spaces for intimacy. It's a game changer. It blows my mind being able to hear these conversations that I feel like I shouldn't be allowed to hear. It feels too intimate. And I learned so much about how to support Al by learning more about Jim's work as well. So I think particularly if you are a spouse or a partner of somebody who is suffering and that partner is male, then I would check out Jim.
And for people who want to find you, find out more about you, where would you like to send them?
Dead easy. Just go to Google and type in Truth, Lies and Work. We should be all over page one, podcast, Truth, Lies and Workplace Culture. Which you'll find in every single app. Go onto LinkedIn. You'll be speaking to Leanne because I'm Gen X and can't be bothered with it. And then I think we're also on Instagram. Are we on TikTok? Are we, Lee?
We're on all the socials. Yeah, Truth Lies Work. But yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best one. Just search for Al and I. Yeah, drop us a message.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Fantastic. As always, links to those in the show notes. Al, Leanne, thank you so much for coming on the show and for sharing your experience.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, hope you enjoyed that interview with Al and Leanne Elliott. What I particularly enjoyed and found interesting about this episode was hearing Al and Leanne's personal experience of burnout. I'm really grateful that we've got people like Leanne who are prepared to be so candid about their own experience, and the fact that we've got the two of them who can then talk about the effect on other people. If someone you know appears to be experiencing burnout, then how can you help them? What are the right and wrong things to say? And I absolutely loved what they were saying about comparison. This has been really one of the themes for my own personal development over the past few months, how it doesn't serve me to compare myself to others, particularly as I start my own business, but I'm much better off comparing myself with my past self. What progress have I made? Where have I improved? To use a sporting analogy, I'm not trying to beat other people, but I am trying continually to improve my personal best. So do visit the show notes page for this episode, which you'll find at changeworldlife.com/178. That's changeworldlife.com/178. And something which you can do which would really help me out and raise awareness of the podcast and important interviews like this one, and that's to leave a review. My preference would be for you to leave it on Apple Podcasts, but if that's not available to you, and if you'd like instead to leave a comment on something like Spotify, then that works just as well. Your reviews will help others to find the podcast, and they will help let people know that, you know what, there's actually some pretty good content. Now, I don't often look at specific careers in this podcast, but one that stands out for me is data science. It's just one that I hear talked about all the time, so I figured, you know what, let's find out a bit more. So in 2 weeks' time, we're going to be finding out just what data science is, what the careers are available, and how you can get into it. So if you want to hear that, make sure you've subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode, and I can't wait to see you then. Cheers. Bye.